There are four children. This book is about four children: Peter, Susan, Edmund, and Lucy. And their surname is Pevensey. And they live in London during a time of war, during World War II. And so there's bombs falling on London, and it's a very dangerous place to be. And so Peter, Susan, Edmund, and Lucy get sent off to the country to stay with Uncle Diggory, and he has a massive house. And they've arrived at the house, and they're playing hide and seek. This must be a simply enormous wardrobe, thought Lucy, going still further in and pushing the soft folds of the coats aside to make room for her. And then she noticed that there was something crunching under her feet. I wonder, is that more mothballs? She thought, stooping down to feel it with her hand. But instead of feeling the hard, smooth wood of the floor of the wardrobe, she felt something soft and powdery and extremely cold. This is very strange, she said, and went on a step or two further. The next moment, she found that she was rubbing against her face and hands. What was rubbing against her face and hands was no longer soft fur, but something hard and rough and even prickly. Why, it's just like branches of a tree! And then she saw that there was a light ahead of her, not a few inches away where the back of the wardrobe ought to have been, but a long way off. Something cold and soft was falling on her. A moment later, she found that she was standing in the middle of a wood at night time with snow under her feet and snowflakes falling through the air. Lucy felt a little frightened, but she felt very inquisitive and excited as well. She looked back over her shoulder, and there, between the dark, she could still see the open doorway of the wardrobe and even catched a glimpse of the empty room from which she had set out. She had, of course, left the door open, for she knew that it is a very silly thing to shut oneself into a wardrobe. It seemed to be still daylight there. I can always get back if the things go wrong, thought Lucy. And she began to walk forward, crunch, crunch, over the snow and through the wood towards the other light. In about 10 minutes, she reached and found it was a lamppost. As she stood looking at it, wondering why there was a lamppost in the middle of a wood and wondering what to do next, she heard the pitter-patter of feet coming towards her. And soon after, there was a strange person stepped out from among the trees into the light of the lamppost. He was only a little taller than Lucy herself, and he carried over his head an umbrella white with snow. From the waist upwards, he was like a man, but his legs were shaped like goats, the hair of them glossy black. And instead of feet, he had goat's hooves. He also had a tail, but Lucy did not notice this at first because it was neatly caught up over the arm that held the umbrella so as to keep it from trailing in the snow. He had a red wooden muffler around his neck, and his skin was rather reddish too. He had a strange but pleasant little face with a short pointed beard and curly hair. And out of the hair, there stuck two horns, one on each side of his forehead. One of his hands, as I have said, held the umbrella. In the other arm, he carried several brown paper parcels. What with the parcels and the snow, it looked just as if he had been doing his Christmas shopping. He was a fawn. And when he saw Lucy, he gave such a start of surprise that he dropped all of his parcels. "But goodness gracious me!" exclaimed the fawn. Good evening, said Lucy. But the fawn was so busy picking up his parcels that at first it did not reply. When it had finished, it made a little bow. Good evening, good evening, said the fawn. Excuse me, I don't want to be inquisitive, but should I be right in thinking that you are a daughter of Eve? My name is Lucy, said she, not quite understanding him. But you are, forgive me, you are what they call a girl, said the fawn. Of course I'm a girl, said Lucy. You are in fact human? Of course I'm human, said Lucy, still a little puzzled. To be sure, said the fawn. How stupid of me, but I've never seen a son of Adam or a daughter of Eve before. I am delighted. That is to say... And then it stopped, as if it had been going to say something that it not intended, but then had remembered in time. Delighted, delighted, it went on. Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Tumnus. I'm very pleased to meet you, Mr. Tumnus, said Lucy. And may I ask, O Lucy, daughter of Eve, said Mr. Tumnus, how you have come into Narnia? Narnia? What's that? Said Lucy. This is the land of Narnia, said the fawn, where we are now, all that lies between the lamppost and the great castle of Carl Paravel on the eastern sea. And you have come from the wild woods of the west. I got in through the wardrobe in the spare room, said Lucy. Ah, said Mr. Tumnus, in a rather melancholy voice. If only I had worked harder at geography when I was a little fawn, I should no doubt know all about those strange countries. Ah, it's too late now. But they aren't countries at all, said Lucy, almost laughing. It's only just back there. At least, I'm not sure. It's summer there. Meanwhile, said Mr. Tumnus, it is winter in Narnia, and has been for ever so long, and we shall both catch cold if we stand here talking in the snow. Daughter of Eve, from the far land of Spare where the eternal summer reigns around the bright city of Wardrobe, how would it be if you came and had tea with me? Oh, thank you very much, Mr. Tumnus, said Lucy, but I was wondering whether I ought to be getting back. Oh, it's only just round the corner, said the fawn, and there'll be a roaring fire and toast and sardines and cake. Well, it's very kind of you, said Lucy, but I shan't be able to stay long. Well, if you'll take my arm, daughter of Eve, said Mr. Tumnus, I shall be able to hold the umbrella over both of us. That's the way. Now off we go. So we'll pick up that story next week, but do be reading it along over this coming week. I've got a question for you. Put up your hand, all of us, if you've ever played hide and seek. Played hide and seek? Great. I want to know the best hiding place that you know in your house. What's the best hiding place?
Under my bed.
Under your bed. Very good. Bronte, where's the best hiding place? Where do you often hide? Behind the curtain. That's a good hiding place. Darcy, where do you hide? In your attic. You just go up into the attic and close it behind you. Is there things up in the attic?
Yeah, I just hide under.
You hide under the table in the attic. Very good. Jacob, what's your best hiding place? Nice and loudly so I can hear. Your mum and dad's wardrobe. Very good. That's always a good hiding place. Can I tell you one of my favourite hiding places? In my mum's house, when I was really small, where I used to live, above her stairs, there was a cupboard. And she kept bedding in there, you know, duvets and pillows and stuff. Covers above the stairs. And there's also towels and stuff. And what I used to do, because I was smaller then, I would climb into this cupboard, close the door behind me. I wasn't as sensible as Lucy. I'd put myself in this cupboard, and I'd bury myself under the bedding and the towels. So that even if someone opened the cupboard door, they would have to rummage underneath the towels to find me. So, what makes a good hiding place? What makes a good hiding
place? Not to tell anyone so that nobody knows where it is.
It needs to be secret, okay? What else? What else makes a good hiding place? Yes?
So no one clears it out.
No one clears it out. So it's not obvious, yes? It's not obvious. It's not clear that it's a hiding place. I want to also say that there needs to be a slight scariness about that hiding place. So that when the people looking say to themselves, they wouldn't dare hide in that. You know, things like, I don't want to give any danger. Don't do this at home, but like up the chimney.
Yeah.
That would be a really good hiding place.
Yeah.
Don't hide up the chimney.
I can't.
Parents know that they might be hiding up the chimney from now on. But it's those sort of places you wouldn't dare hide there. They've got to be slightly scary, and often they are dark so that people can't see you. Lucy was playing hide and seek in the story, and so she went into the wardrobe, which was dark. That's why she left the door open, so that it wasn't completely dark. And she got herself right to the back, and she journeyed through into the darkness. Well, then she found Narnia, but before she did, she had to enter into the darkness. And then the light that from the lamppost shone in the distance. People don't turn lamps on usually when it's bright sunshine. They turn lights on when it's dark. We need lights when it's dark to see where we're going. Jesus is described as the light of the world. He shines in darkness. Part of our journey of faith, part of understanding and knowing who Jesus is and appreciating that he came, was to know that he needed to come. We needed his light because the world can be quite dark and quite scary sometimes. Now, as Lucy goes into the wardrobe, what does she feel against her face? Do you remember?
The fur of the coat.
So at first she feels fur coat against her skin. Have you ever felt fur coat?
Yeah.
It's really soft and smooth. Very soft on your face. So I want you to close your eyes and imagine you're walking through the wardrobe like Lucy and you're feeling the fur coat on your cheek. Nice and soft, and you're thinking, oh, this is nice and cozy. But then you suddenly feel prickles. Like a fir tree, like our Christmas tree over there. That's brushing against you. That's not so soft. It's a bit rough. It's a bit prickly. It's a bit uncomfortable. Sometimes as we journey into a relationship with God, as we journey towards Jesus as a light, it can start off really nice and comfy. It can feel nice. We can find it easy and cozy, and it's all great. But then sometimes it turns to be quite prickly and quite rough and quite difficult. And it goes through. But Lucy continues on through that prickliness, steps into this magical world which opens up before her. A new world, a magic world with this lamppost. Now, do you think that Narnia was always behind the wardrobe? No. It would be a bit weird them bringing the wardrobe into the room, which they must have done. They brought this wardrobe in. They didn't have Narnia attached to it, did it?
No.
So, and they put it up against the wall, which was probably a solid brick wall. So Narnia wasn't just suddenly built there. He just put it up against the wall. Calm yourself. Just calm yourself. The interesting thing, later on in the story, if you read, you'll find out, Lucy tries to invite Peter, Susan, and Edmund, her brothers and sister, to join her in Narnia. So she goes, it's through here. And they get into the wardrobe, and they find that at the back, it's wood paneling. There is no Narnia, and they don't believe that she went into Narnia. So what we learn is that Lucy's not in charge of when she goes into Narnia and when she's not. It's like there's some magic that draws her in. When we're journeying towards Jesus, sometimes our journey towards Jesus isn't the same as other people's. We can try and tell them how to get there, but sometimes they need to make their own way there. And they've got to wait to allow this magic to draw them in. Our journey towards Jesus isn't just about what we do, it's about allowing the magic to draw us in. The call of God, Jesus drawing us towards himself. And we've got to sometimes allow Jesus to work on our friends and our brothers and our sisters and our family members and the whole world. We have to pray that Jesus will do that work, because that's the only way that they're going to enter into his world and into his kingdom. Well, we'll find out who the lion is later. So what I want you to do, at the back, we're going to go with Hannah. There is some craft activity to make lampposts. As you make the lampposts to hang on your tree, I want to ask if you could make two, one to take home to put on your tree and one to hang on our tree here. The lamppost is representing Christ, this light that's drawing us together. Adults, if you want to go and help and make your own, then do. Otherwise, I'm going to just talk to you a little bit more, just us guys. So go make the lampposts. That would be great. And we'll bring them down later on in the service. Adults, just whilst they're doing that or they're starting to do that, I want to just maybe branch our thinking out a little bit. The story today really helps us to ask the question, why do we enter faith? Why do we enter into a relationship with Jesus? Advent is a time of waiting, of anticipation, but of preparation for the coming of Jesus. Not just to celebrate his birth in Bethlehem many thousands of years ago, but also his second coming. And he's coming daily into this world. His invitation to be in relationship with us. Advent, I encourage us this week to think about, why do we need Jesus? Why do we need Jesus? It's becoming more and more popular in our world to answer that question of sort of feeling like Jesus is just coming to say hello. You know, people say that Jesus just came to let us know that he loved us and to hang out with us. And that's great. There's nothing wrong with that. Except for that's not really necessary. You know, he continued to tell people that he loved them. People knew that. Jesus needed to come into the world for something different. Isaiah called him a light. A light is dawning upon the people. And as I said a moment ago, light is only necessary when there's darkness. We don't need a light. A light, if you bring a torch in the middle of summer, midday in the middle of summer, and you came and you handed someone a torch and said, here, I've brought you a light, people will go, thanks, I don't really need it. Lights are needed when it is dark. This Advent is about acknowledging and noticing the darkness that we step into in life, that we journey through, that we hide in. And if we're honest, each one of us has dark things in our life. And we look around the world and there are dark things. Advent should be calling from us the prayer, Jesus, we need you. Come. Come, Jesus, we need you. We need your light to shine in this very real darkness. That is why we need Jesus. Without knowing that, without acknowledging that, we don't need Jesus. No one needs Jesus if we don't acknowledge that, that darkness that we find ourselves in. I also was talking about how we enter into a relationship. So we acknowledge that the world is a dark place. We have darkness in our own selves, anger, bitterness, division from people, disappointments, frustrations. We have these dark things that we hold on to. But then we need to journey towards the light. And in this story, as I said a moment ago, Lucy journeys through. That journey can start off nicely. Journey can start off with, this is the right way. Yes, I'm feeling much better. But then difficulty comes, and we don't turn back and head back to this false light, but we journey towards the true light. We carry on journeying. But as I said, Lucy's journey into Narnia is not a given. It's not a, well, if I do these things, then I will become next to the light. I will enter into the world of God. It's not so easy as just to do a kind of step-by-step thing, because we each enter into it in a different way. For me, my journey towards faith was an intellectual one. It was, I needed to make sense of it intellectually, because I think generally I got it in my heart, but I just couldn't explain it, and that was my stumbling block. But then when I go and I talk to other people, most of the time, they're not really that interested in the intellectual stuff. They want an experience of God. And I struggle with that because I'm just like, well, you know, once you understand it, it's easy. Our journeys into a relationship with God, into acknowledging God as the light of the darkness, is going to be different. And that's because God calls us. It's not about what we do. We can go through different steps, But that's not going to get us to God. We have to rely on his grace to call us into a relationship in the way that he wants it and in the timing that he wants it. And therefore, we have to trust and we have to pray. We pray for those people who are not yet in the light. We pray for them that God would continue to draw them into his world and into his company. And what is that faith? What is it that we promise people in the faith? Yes, it's light in the darkness. But how we experience faith is different because our darknesses are different. Faith, as we will see in the different children, the four children's encounter with Narnia, as they step into Narnia, which is a sort of symbol of this world of faith, the world with God, as they step in, they each experience the world in a different way. Next week, we will hear about Edmund and how he experiences entering into Narnia. It is for Edmund particularly painful. We'll find out next week why that is. But Lucy, Peter, Susan, and Edmund all experience this in a different way. The one thing that is shared amongst them is the meeting of the lion, Aslan, the Jesus figure. So this Advent, do we acknowledge why we need Jesus? Why the world needs Jesus? Are we willing and open to calling these people who are in a great darkness into a kingdom of light and allowing God's grace to work through us in the way that he chooses? And are we ready to stand with them in his kingdom and experience his presence and his light shining in the darkness? We're going to sing. I'm going to sing and worship. During this song, I just want to invite you, as we sing, to be reflecting on that, on those questions, asking God, how is he calling you closer to him today? And how might he be calling other people that you know? And maybe you want to pray for the people that don't know Jesus, to pray that this Advent and this Christmas, that they will be called into the light of God.